Welcome to the very first Baseball Chronicle podcast. I'm Phil Bencomo. My guest on the program is Marty Appel, author of the new biography, Munson, The Life and Death of a Yankee Captain. In the 1970s, he worked as the Yankees' public relations director and co-authored Thurman Munson's autobiography. Here's my conversation with Marty Appel. How did you get started with the Yankees?
Oh, that goes back to 1967 when I wrote a letter looking for a summer job while I was in college, and I was hired to answer Mickey Mantle's fan mail. So that goes way back.
So you were a Yankees fan, right, when you got started?
I was a Yankees fan, and the idea of a summer job, you know, in the late 60s, baseball wasn't particularly coveted by my generation. They were off onto other things. So it was a little unusual that they got a letter from a 17-year-old or whatever I was then looking for a summer job. And they had all this fan mail backed up that hadn't been answered, and they knew those would be angry fans who weren't getting answers. So they wisely thought they needed that mail attended to, and I was hired, and that was my responsibility.
So anything memorable from those days?
Well, just getting to know Mickey Mantle. I mean, he was my hero, and all of a sudden, Mickey Mantle knew my name and knew who I was. I don't know if I've ever had a bigger thrill.
Reading through your book, you write that you sort of joined the organization at the same time Thurman Munson did. So when did you first meet Thurman?
In 1968, he came to Yankee Stadium with his Binghamton team, shortly after he'd been the number one draft pick, for an exhibition game prior to a regular season Yankee game. And so we all went out to meet him, to get him photographed, to introduce ourselves, because there was no question even at that stage that he was going to be in the major leagues before long and be our number one catcher.
So what were your first impressions of him when you met him?
I thought he was very mature for his age, that he kind of was not like a rookie in awe, handled himself like a big leaguer already. You could tell the difference between the guys who just feel out of place and Munson, who just felt like he belonged.
And over the years, how well did you get to know him?
Well, I got to know him very well. He did not have a good relationship with the media. So when we traveled on road trips, he avoided the media. And I wasn't quite media. I was part of the family. I was a Yankee PR director by then. So we would occasionally go out to dinner. I mean, we weren't like the closest friends in the world, but we did have a nice relationship. And he later agreed to do his autobiography with me.
Now, why do you think he agreed to do that? You know, if he didn't like the media spotlight, that kind of thing.
Well, as a hedge against somebody doing a book about him that he would surely have hated, made no money off of, and gotten very upset with. He knew that an autobiography would probably kill off anybody writing a biography.
What was that project like, writing the autobiography with him?
We worked on tape recorder and worked mostly at his home in New Jersey that summer of 77. And he kept his tails to the baseball field. There was very little about what else was going on in his life or what his childhood had been. It was really strictly a retelling of his Yankee adventures, and that's what he wanted, and my role was to give him what he wanted.
Why did you feel you had to go back and do a biography after you'd already written this autobiography?
I knew there was so much more to the story, that it was compelling and interesting and heroic in a way. And over the years, people would say to me, boy, I really enjoyed that book you did with Munson. And while I appreciated the compliment, in my heart, I knew it could have been a much better book. There was so much more to the story. So when The Bronx is Burning aired on ESPN a couple of years ago, the Munson character was pretty interesting, as played by Eric Jensen. And that kind of revived interest in him and got Doubleday, the publisher, interested in a full-blown biography.
Now, one of the things I really enjoyed in the book was seeing the other side of Thurman. He was often portrayed as sort of a gruff, grumpy guy. But from the reading through the book, it seems like there was a lot more to him.
Oh yeah, and he enjoyed the gruff, grumpy grouchiness directed to the media, but he was a warm, sensitive guy as well, and a great family man. And that's really was the beauty of his story, in that he came from a pretty unhappy and loveless childhood home and was determined to break that cycle and have a really good family life of his own as he became an adult. So he married his childhood sweetheart. They had three great kids, and probably his greatest accomplishment was breaking that cycle, providing a loving family life for his family. And that goes on because his three kids are married with children and similarly have great families.
Could you give me an example from the book of that softer side?
Oh, his wife, Diane, always liked to talk about how when he was home after giving the kids baths, the girls, they'd always want Thurman to brush their hair because they said he does it softly and gently and mom's rough and with the tangles. And that's just a very little insight into his caring for his children.
Next, I want to talk a little bit about the captaincy, being the captain of the Yankees. How was that for Thurman? How did he handle that? Was that something that he enjoyed, took pride in?
He didn't quite understand it at first. He was confused by what it required, and he didn't really pick up any new responsibilities with it, just the title. When he said, what does this mean? Do I bring the lineups out in the beginning? Is there anything I'm supposed to be doing differently? And Billy Martin said to him, nope, you're perfect captain the way you are. You lead by example. Now you have a title that goes with it. So he kind of shrugged his shoulders and went out there and continued to play his game. But he winds up winning the MVP award and taking the Yankees to their first World Series in 12 years. So whatever way it worked, it was a brilliant idea by George Steinbrenner and Billy Martin.
In particular, how did he handle 1977, that year, that season? That team is sort of infamous for all the drama surrounding it.
It was a rough year, and the difference, of course, was the arrival of Reggie Jackson. Thurman had advocated getting Jackson. He really wanted him in the middle of the lineup. But no sooner did Reggie come than he did this magazine article, which is famous now, for Sport Magazine, I'm the straw that stirs the drink, and Thurman can only stir it bad. So it created great tension between them. On the other hand, it also aligned the other 23 guys on the team more closely to Thurman because he was really their guy. So if anything, it made for a rough year for Reggie. But by the time Thurman left us in 1979, he and Reggie had kind of worked things out. Reggie had flown with him in his plane and had even gone to Canton, Ohio, in the middle of the winter as a guest when Thurman was being honored at a dinner. So it was good that the two of them had patched things up.
Now, you mentioned planes, and that was a big passion of Thurman's. Could you talk a little bit about how he got involved in that?
Well, he wanted to spend more time with his family, part of this whole adjustment to having a good family life. And he decided early on, Arnold Palmer was one of his heroes, and Palmer was a pilot who went from tournament to tournament by plane. So Thurman got a plane so he could go home after games. And people had no idea that while the other guys were driving to their suburban homes, Thurman was driving to Teterboro Airport in New Jersey and flying to Canton, Ohio, so he could be with his kids in the morning and tend to his interests in Canton. And then he'd fly back to Teterboro like at 1 or 2 in the afternoon. And this was going on for a few years, and fans really had no idea.
Now, in the book, you also wrote a little bit about how the players reacted to this. Some of them, you know, jumped at the chance to fly with him. Others were a little hesitant. You talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Bobby Mercer was among those who would never go up with him. And he offered me a chance to go up with him, and I refused. But some, Jackson, Nettles, some of the other guys did fly with him. And it wasn't so much about his piloting skills. It was more like, are you comfortable in a small airplane or not?
a lot of the book is your personal recollections and that sort of thing. It's sort of interesting for a biography. It adds a certain dimension, new dimension to it. Did you ever have trouble sort of maintaining objectivity as a biographer, considering you'd been involved in so many of the events?
I think it turned out pretty objective because it certainly brought out his flaws as well as his strengths. It was an unusual approach, and I would ask people periodically, how is it jarring when I suddenly appear in the story as a character and you haven't heard from me in 50 pages? So it was a different kind of approach, but because I was there for the story, it was a unique perspective that was worth bringing into it. There were some people I would sometimes discuss with other writers some particular story I was considering using, and they would say to me, well, are you his publicist or his biographer? So I had to be reminded that, oh, I guess that story gets in.
Could you talk a little bit about his relationship with the fans and maybe kids in particular? Because he seemed to get a lot of love from the fans, more so than certainly the media.
The fans saw around the bad press that he was getting and his contentious relationship with the media, and they loved the guy for his the way he approached the game and respected the game and respected the Yankees. So it was really wonderful the way they would cheer for him, even if he got a grouchy column in the newspaper that morning. Once he even blew them off with a famous obscene gesture, as we know it, and the next day they were all cheers for him. So they really, that was like New York fans at their best because they saw through it all and loved the guy for the way he played the game.
And, you know, part of the way he played was playing through pain. Could you talk a little bit about that?
A lot of players do that. I mean, there's very few regular players, you know, that play every day that don't have aches and pains of some sort. Thurman's case, though, arthritis was starting to really get to his knees, and his catching days were probably drawing to a close by 1979. And then he went through a period of a couple of years where a hand injury from a backswing made it almost impossible for him to properly throw out base stealers. And despite that, the pitchers wanted to work with him all the time for his sign-calling abilities. And he even won a gold glove in one of those years in which he made like 35 throwing errors. So, again, that was just a tribute to the things that you never appreciate from the stands, but is so valuable, you know, on an inside baseball point of view.
And what do you think of him as a hitter? You just talked a little bit about his defensive skills, but he was also quite the hitter.
He was a terrific hitter without hitting for power. He sort of adjusted to Yankee Stadium, to the power alleys. He never went home run crazy. And then one day in a playoff game against Kansas City, he hits one out to the Babe Ruth Monument in Monument Park. And Henry Heck, the New York Post reporter, said to me for the book, it was the most incredible athletic feat I've ever seen because he was simply incapable of doing that. Quite a statement.
Now, wanted to talk a little bit about the crash. That was August 2nd. What was that day like for you?
One of the worst. And if you're of a certain age, you sort of put it in there with the day Kennedy was killed. It was almost the baseball equivalent of that. You know, you remember where you were at certain places, at certain events. For younger people, certainly 9/11 will never be forgotten in that sense. I was working in the baseball commissioner's office at that time. I had left the Yankees, and George Steinbrenner called Commissioner Bowie Kuhn late in the afternoon, and that's how I found out through that phone call, which started a thing of 4 days of heading for Canton and dealing with the worst imaginable thing.
Now, you mentioned George Steinbrenner, and in the book you see a very different side of him.
Well, I think the chapter where I talk about him getting the phone call from the airport to tell him that Thurman had been killed, and then his bringing in his senior staff into his office and dealing with the grief and then taking command of what was going to unfold over the next 4 days. It was a fascinating visit to George Steinbrenner when he was at the peak of his power. It was the boss in action, and it was marvelous. Just to be able to talk to people in the room and recapture what went on that day, I think the readers are going to find that to be fascinating.
Now, how about the day after the crash, the game on August 3rd? You write about that in the book, the fans with their 10-minute-long ovation.
It's kind of a fresh comparison can be made to the Michael Jackson service at the Staples Center. I mean, that was 18,000 people gathering to honor Michael Jackson. Here was 51,000 people drawn to Yankee Stadium as though it was a cathedral. In the misty rain, with home plate left empty in the pregame ceremonies. And it was just the fans needed to be with other fans to share the moment and, you know, share the grief. A very, very memorable night for anyone who was there.
In writing the book, obviously you spent a lot of time with Thurman in the 70s, but was there anything that surprised you that you learned as you were researching and writing?
Well, I'd never spoken to his brother or sister before. I'd never met them. Even Bobby Mercer was shocked to know that he had a brother. Found the brother down in Georgia, and it really opened the windows on what a troubled childhood there had been. So that came as a surprise, yes. And then a further surprise was really a full appreciation of his great athleticism. This was a guy who could try something once, pool, bowling, handball, golf, and just nail it. He'd get it right the first try, one day's worth, and then he'd never lose. He was like an amazing athlete, whatever you threw at him.
Now, in the book, you see a lot of different sides of Thurman. Do you think he had, you know, one real side, or were all those sides just part of the whole?
Well, I think he was very human, and just like all of us, had his strengths and weaknesses, and it's all there. And I think the feedback I've been getting is you come out of the book in the end liking the guy, wishing you'd known him, wishing you'd gone out and had a beer with him. Just a good guy, but much more complex than summing it up in those two words. Like all of us, had his flaws, had his strengths. The total package was one you wanted to know.
All right. Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Phil. Good to talk to you.
That's a wrap for this edition of the Baseball Chronicle podcast. I've been your host, Phil Bencomo. Music provided by Thursday Group, and technical assistance as I tried to figure out this podcasting thing provided by the internet, according to Google. You can visit us on the web at thebaseballchronicle.com. Until next time, thanks for listening.